Hello and welcome to Two Bald Men Fighting Over a Comb, a new podcast in which two follically challenged ne'er-do-wells venture to the fountain of knowledge and gurgle the water. I'm Tom Owen-Smith, alongside...
Rob Elvin.
What's been tickling your grey cells of late?
I was thinking this week, rather bizarrely, about when Rolf Harris died. I think he actually died on like the 10th of May, but no one had a... Because he had no press, he had no PR company to write a press release and stuff like that. So all these hacks were waiting out. They saw, like, obviously a body bag being taken out of his home and all this stuff. But no one actually knew that, yeah, 100% that it died. They were like 95%, but they didn't want to run anything because they just thought, like, oh, it gives a shit anyway. So when the family did then release a statement to say he had died, then that's when, like, I think they were able to report on it like a week later. Anyway, no, it just got me thinking just in terms of... up until the point of where it obviously came out that he was a very nasty man, then, you know, he'd done a portrait of the Queen, as hung in some gallery, you know, his record, you know, did he do Stairway to Heaven or something like that?
Don't forget Animal Hospital.
Yeah, well, this is it. So all those things in terms of, you know, being popular, because, I mean, as you know, growing up, he was on TV doing all those Draw with Rolf or whatever it was and all that stuff, his wobble board. Anyway, no, and it's just obviously from the revelations, then he was basically cancelled. You know, you can't listen to any of his records, you know, full blast, you know, regardless of if you like him or not, because people have that opinion and say, well, what are you doing listening to him because of all the things that he did? Similar to, you know, other famous people who, you know, who is transpired. I mean, look at, what's his name, Philip Schofield. He's come out and said all of this stuff, even though he said it wasn't illegal.
Well, that's a bit of a weird one with Philip Schofield, isn't it? Because his brother's done something wrong, and he's done something which is, well, having an affair with a younger person who wasn't underage. But then he's sort of shamed by association. It's like, oh, you know, people ask the question, is he the same as his brother?
Well,
you
of know, course.
Is this all a lie?
Yeah. But I mean, he wasn't like an artist, really, was he? But no, my point is that obviously since this whole thing's come out, he's quit ITV. And there's been this, you know, he's essentially going to be cancelled, regardless of what he had an affair. But I mean, how many people have an affairs anyway who are famous and, you know, or just a marriage of convenience? And then it got me thinking about the guy who created the Gill Sans font, Eric Gill. And when you look, I mean, he was obviously a famous artist. He's, you know, he created the typeface. Regarded as...
Gill Sans.
Sorry?
Gill Sans.
Yeah, Gill Sans. Yeah. So regarded as, you know, because I think, yeah, they use the typeface on like railway stations. I think the BBC use it now for their websites and...
Penguin as well.
Yeah. And when you then look into the history of that guy, that he sexually abused his two daughters, he had sexual kind of relations, could you call it, with their dog. And
I didn't know that. It's the dog.
Yes. Yeah, he kind of did all those things, but where he'd kind of become a recluse with his family, his kids didn't know that was wrong. They just assumed that it was just the norm for the dad to have sex with them and everything else. And there was a biography written, and then no one really, that wasn't kind of touched upon, but then somebody else did it. And in his diaries, he documents and writes about him having sex with his daughters and, you know, goes on to say about how he had sex or did something with his dog. And there was a mini kind of, like a petition where they were trying to get his work banned and stuff like that. But the art world, they're like, no, you know, he's a remarkable artist and, you know, blah, blah, blah.
It doesn't happen in other fields.
No, well, this is the thing. Is it just because a lot of people just don't know about it? Because, you know, as soon as people hear about it, they then become revolt. Yeah, oh, God. You know, similar to like that Russell Brand and Jonathan Ross when they took the piss out of Andrew Sachs's daughter. At the time, no one listened to the radio show, right? And I think maybe one person complained. It was only when it was in the newspapers that people actively went out to listen to the podcast or to listen to the rerun of the radio show online to then become outraged by it. And it's like, well, why did you listen to it if you knew you were going to be outraged by it?
Robert, is there one particular artist or, you know, something that you have enjoyed that you feel bitter about not being able to listen to or watch anymore?
You know what? I hadn't really thought about that too much, really. I was never... I do like the Jim Will Fix It theme tune.
Dangerous territory.
Well, no, but this is the thing, because it reminds me when they go that ba 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 ba. It reminds me of God Only Knows by the Beach Boys. But then of that era, I think there were so many fantastic TV themes written at the time. And, you know, I'm not going out and listening to fucking Jim Will Fix It theme tune every day. But when I hear it, it's like, oh. And it reminds me, but yeah, because it's that whole thing as well, because I wasn't, you know, I was luckily not involved with anything to do with, you know, Jimmy Savile and everything else like that. But yeah, I don't know, going back to like this, the, you know, the Gil Sands stuff, I just think to myself, is it just a matter of time before it becomes more well known? And then there is this thing of like, right, we just, because I think his statue, I think it was May 2023, someone climbed up and they sprayed painted or they tried to do something to the statue which they've got of the dude at BBC House or something else like that. So it's, you know, is it just a matter of time?
I think you're right. I think it's because he's not well known. But yeah, going back to what you said about or what I asked you about being bitter, I asked that because I have one that makes me a little bit bitter. I used to love Louis C.K. I thought he was just one of the best comedians going, and you know, and then he was called out as a pervert, and it turned out to be true after he denied it, and there's all this great comedy that I just can't watch anymore, or you know, because it's all in videos, and you feel a little bit bitter about that, don't you?
Oh yeah, but I thought he's back on. I thought he had another tour or something. I thought I'd seen him. He's back again.
He's trying to come back, but it's how successful will that be? And now he's been cancelled in inverted commas.
Mm. Well, I never really was a big fan of Louis C.K., but then most American comedians, I've never really, I think, other than, say, Bill Hicks, Richard Pryor, other than that, there's not many comedians who have American comedians who really took on my funny bone, because I can't remember, he's just really quite ranty, and someone suggested he's like Gingerhead.
Bill Burr,
yeah.
I think the thing with Louis C.K. was he used to say a lot of things that were really disgusting, and it was funny because it's like he's saying it and he wouldn't really do it.
Oh, but he ended up doing it.
As soon as you learn that that's who he is, you know, it's not funny. He's just telling you about his, you know, his diary entry.
Oh, hiding it in plain sight.
I did a bit of reading on Eric Gill, and it looks like even in his work he was advertising what he was. You know, it's like he used his daughters as nude models and things like that. I think there's a Tate exhibition where they're trying to show all of what he is, and so they start it with his writing on an envelope that is him like listing the measurements of his daughters' busts and legs and things, and then at the end of it he's put the measurement for his flaccid and erect penis. You know, this is stuff that he was saying he was doing. He's just a really, really bad man, and you know, it's like you wonder why the art world doesn't catch up and think let's preemptively get rid of him before the you know, before it comes into the media and we're forced to. It's a fascinating subject. It's very, you know, very much of our time. I mean, we didn't hear about this stuff, you know, 10, 20 years ago. I think it's after the Jimmy Savile thing, really.
Mm.
What are your thoughts?
Well, I wondered, I use the Arial font mainly in my life. So if they got rid of it, I wouldn't be too upset by it. I probably... Maybe I know some of his artwork and stuff like that just from seeing it, I wouldn't necessarily associate it with him.
He's done parts of buildings as well, so he'd have to chip away at the marble that's on the buildings and put something else there.
Rip it down, yeah. How far do you go? But is it just a simple case then that you separate the personal life from the artist and stuff like that? Because you could say, for example, a leader of the country or someone who's done good. I mean, like, say, for example, like Gandhi, yeah?
Yeah.
Now, he was imprisoned quite a lot when he was younger through non-violent protests along with his wife.
Mm.
And there was one point where she became ill in the prison and they said, oh, well, we can give her some antibiotics and she'll be fine. And he's like, nope, we don't accept that kind of stuff. You know, it's against our religion, everything else. So, unfortunately, she died. And then a few weeks later, he became ill. And they said, well, you're going to die. But, oh, we've got these antibiotics. But I guess you don't want them then, do you? And he's like, no, I'll have them. And he took it, obviously, and he got better and went on to achieve, you know, great things. Now, do you focus on that bit? And he was a bit of a shitbag. He might have just hated his wife. And that's a good way of kind of, you know. But at the same time, why didn't he, you know, allow her that? Or was it just back in those days where it's like, oh, no, the man makes the decision on the woman's health? But so, you know, it's a hard one. And it's probably that's the wrong expression to use. But it's a difficult one, isn't it, I think? But no, it was just interesting in terms of, you know, Rolf Harris dying.
Mm.
And just the subsequent kind of like, you know, thought. And then obviously Philip Schofield, that thing just in the last week. And yeah, that was that's what's kind of clouded my thought a little bit. Not tremendously so, but no, I just found the whole thing interesting in terms of, you know, how much more cancelling are people going to do and apologising for it. For something that you did 10 years ago, whether it be a tweet or a comment or whatever.
Do we lose as a society by getting rid of our culture? That's a question. There's a consequence, isn't there?
Well, somebody suggested getting rid of mice and men as a GCSE text because they were saying they didn't agree with the language that was used. Now, I didn't read the whole thing, but at the same time, it's like, well,
it was of its time, you know, wasn't it?
It was of its time, but you listen to...
For some people.
Well, I know, but if you listen to some rap songs and stuff like that, that's the only time I hear in modern culture derogatively worded expressions and stuff towards black people. And you just think, okay. But then it's that whole question about ownership, owning the word. So I get that. You know, I'm not trying to say one is right and one is wrong. It's just that it's interesting in terms of how... Yes, you can look back, and I think it's shocking when you think back to all the stuff that did happen, you know, and just absolutely bloody crazy. And that's basically every country now which is kind of successful, like Britain and America, for example. We were just able to be this successful because we paid fuck all for the slave labour to make this country what it is. And you just think, shit, how horrible is that? Is kind of a historical kind of, yeah, the reason why we are is, you know, we're not a third world country, is the fact that we just exploited a hell of a lot of people and go to their countries, completely destroy their religions, burn all their texts and stuff and say, right, you're now Christians. And yet you get ISIS do it a few years ago. And it's like, how wrong is that? And it's like, well, hang on, were they just not copying us? But anyway, that's a whole mess. I only want to talk to you about Eric Gill.
Yeah. Rob, here's a question for you, which sort of links from that, is because I know you're a big Deep Purple. I was going to say Deep Purple, that's not right. You're a big Pink Floyd fan. And carrying on with the sort of cancel culture discussion, I read in the news either yesterday or the day before that Roger Waters is up for some flack. I mean, he's been quite controversial with regards to his distaste of Israel, but claims he's not anti-Semitic. But he was referred to the police in Germany because he did a gig, The Wall, basically, performing The Wall on stage. And part of The Wall, the stage show for it, is He comes on stage with a long leather trench coat with a sign on it, which is the Walking Hammers, which is from the film. And he's been referred to the police in Germany because they're saying there's a law against anything referencing Nazi Germany, basically. So, I mean, there's some allowance for artistic expression, but yeah, so he was referred to the police because he came on stage with the long black trench coat and with the red band around the arm with the hammers on, because it symbolises the SS, basically. I mean, Roger Waters is a bit of a lightning rod for controversy, but what do you feel about that?
Well, in terms of being an anti-Semitic and his, you know, the comments he makes towards Israel, I don't know enough about any of those things really to make a comment on. I know obviously he's quite political, but in terms of him dressing up or whatever it is, I would say it's a certain amount of theatre, because you've got to remember in 1980 that's when The Wall came out. I went to see Roger Waters perform The Wall live, and I think it was 2016 or 2017. He was still wearing a long trench coat, and he was, you know, and if you listen to the song In the Flesh, you know, some of the, you know, derogatory terms, and it's almost like he's portraying that to almost kind of hold the mirror up and say, look, isn't it just so shit and shocking? This is how it used to be, because he says, "Oh, yeah, that one's got spots." You know, it's almost kind of like, "Well, spots. That's everyone gets spots. Well, where do you draw the line?" You know what I mean? It's like he is almost kind of holding a mirror up. And let's not forget, you know, his dad died in the Second World War. So I don't know. I mean, I think in terms of, you know, because I know he's outspoken about the war in Ukraine, and I think he is not. I don't think he's embarrassing some of the countries and stuff like that. But he did a talk at the UN, and he basically said, "Look, you know, it's an illegal war, but all of the countries are supporting Ukraine by selling them arms or giving, you know, whatever it is, and creating this mass amount of money, and we're all becoming rich from it. Whereas the Ukraine, is getting obliterated." But then the Russians, when you look back to what was agreed with Gorbachev and Bush at the fall of the Berlin Wall, then everything that kind of they held as to be what the negotiations were about, the Americans just pissed all over that and regaled at everything. And so I think Putin was, I don't know if he was a KGB officer at the time, but he saw his country just fall apart. And so it's, you know, you could say that, yes, Russia was, you know, provoked into the war. Now, yes, they don't need to have a war, but why isn't Biden trying to sit down with Putin to try and discuss and try to make peace and everything else? Because he knows he won't, because he'll turn around and say, well, you fucked us before, you'll fuck us again.
It serves America to a certain degree. It has, in my view, echoes of Vietnam. So America got bogged down in Vietnam, and arms are supplied to the communists there by Russia, by China, and it was very bad for America overall. And I think it's like the same thing flipped. I think everyone expected Russia to tear through Ukraine and job done, but it's turning into a sort of Vietnam-esque war there now. It's Russia can't win it, and Ukraine probably can't win it, but they're going to be sent a lot of weapons by their friends, and it's going to be a stalemate, I think, for a few years, until Russia just goes, "Ah, enough's enough, and we've lost too many people." So I think it's a case of history repeating itself, but yeah, it's a very interesting chat. I don't know how we've got onto the Ukraine war from cancel culture, but I'm glad we have.
Yeah, well, I mean, well, this is the thing. It's you know, it's how this podcast is going to be, isn't it? Right, so in terms of Putin, he obviously wants to be famous. He wants to be the guy who saves Russia, because, I mean, well, how many people share that same view in Russia? anyway, you know. But as I said, he wants to be the guy in the history books. And he's going to be in the history books probably for all the wrong things, because of the way that it's being portrayed, rightly or wrongly.
Let's not forget that there are good Russians as well as bad ones. I mean, there's a man called Vasily Arkhipov. Have you heard of him?
Yet? Sorry, that's no in Russian.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay, I'm not that multilingual. Kind of lingual, maybe, but we'll see. yes. Anywho, there's a Russian chap called Vasily Arkhipov, or there was. He's not with us anymore. Who no one's really heard of. It's not a famous name. Who I'm quite interested in, and I've been reading about him recently. He was basically a Soviet naval officer aboard a Russian nuclear submarine during the Cuban Missile Crisis. Are you aware of the Cuban Missile Crisis, Rob?
Wasn't it, was it 1962? And some
there or thereabouts.
Russian submarines entered into waters they shouldn't have been in, so then the Americans then sent some naval ships there and were like, we're going to...
Well, that was part of it. That was part of it, yeah. The part that Vasily Arkhipov was involved with. But the missile crisis itself was... you had Cuba, which was a communist country after the revolution. And America had the Bay of Pigs attempted invasion, which went wrong. And so America weren't happy with there being nuclear missiles trained on their cities in Cuba, and there was a big standoff with the Soviet Union, and we came very close to nuclear war. But
how close?
Very, very close. It was averted in the end. But this story with Arkhipov, he was a deputy captain on one of Russia's diesel submarines that was going to the area, and the Americans were chasing him down. They had some destroyers in the area, and they were dropping depth charges to basically get them to go away. And the Russian submarine had lost contact because it was so deep with Russia for several days, and they couldn't pick up any radio, like mainland radio, from America. So they thought... Well, they had an inkling, maybe, that the missile crisis had led to Armageddon. And there was the captain of the ship and the political officer decided it would be a good idea to fire their missiles because Armageddon had started. And
were they nuclear missiles?
Nuclear missiles, yes. So these two men decided we should fire our missiles. Arkhipov, although he was second in command on the ship, he actually outranked the men. He had some fancy title. I think it was Commodore of the Flotilla.
Flotilla. Didn't you do one of those before we started the podcast?
I did. It's still there, mate. I'm going to go and flush it later. But no, he was Commodore of the Flotilla. And so he outranked the men and he said, no, we're not going to fire our missiles. They needed his agreement to do it. We're going to surface the submarine and find out what's going on. Wait for orders from Russia. So they surfaced and the American destroyers popped over, strafed the boat with fire from planes and things, but didn't attack them. And they basically found out that Armageddon hadn't happened and he'd made the right decision. They got orders from Russia and he sailed back. But if he'd gone along with his colleagues, his comrades, and said, yep, let's fire our missiles because we've not heard on the radio from Russia, so it's clearly, you know, nuclear Armageddon has happened and we need to be involved, many of us wouldn't be alive, if any of us.
Wow. Yeah.
So they're a very amazing... man, Vasily Arkhipov. There was actually another chap, I don't know his name, I've read it somewhere, but there's a similar occurrence in the early 80s. It was a Russian who was in charge of the missile defence. The systems basically told him that America had fired six nuclear missiles at Russia, and he had half an hour to make a decision on whether to retaliate. And he could have done it. He could have fired the whole, you know, the whole nuclear arsenal from Russia back at America and started Armageddon. And he thought about it. He didn't react straight away. He sat back and thought about it and thought, why would America just fire six missiles? It's got to be a glitch. Even though the, you know, the computer system was telling him definitely there were six nuclear missiles going there, he said, no, it's got to be a glitch. And so he did nothing. And it turned out to be a glitch. And he was proved right. So two.
Wow.
I feel like I should find this guy's name because I haven't got
it. Well, in terms of these two dudes then, like the Vasily, is it Vasily?
Vasily. Yeah.
I mean, so what, when he went back to Russia then, was he hailed a hero then, or? I mean,
no, very quiet man. He just carried on his career in the Navy. The second chap, the one I just mentioned, I just looked up his name, it's Stanislav Petrov. So on the internet, it comes up as a little-known Russian whose decision averted a potential nuclear war. He died in May, whatever year this came up, at 77. He was actually derided, I think the word is, by people in Russia for not doing his job, which is, it seems a bit crazy to me.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, that's what got me thinking, just in terms of, you know, this guy that, where, you know, was he decorated and all those different things. But I don't know, maybe I think what I've just said later life, he continued in the Soviet Navy service. He settled, blah, blah, blah. He died 19th of August 1998.
So I think both of these guys have won awards, not from Russia, but sort of worldwide awards for being people who have prevented the human race from not being the human race anymore, being some zombies from Fallout, you know. So so they have been recognised, and I think it's a $50,000 award that both men's families got because it was after their deaths. So, so two Russians that prove that not every Russian is Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because I thought, I mean, in terms of the Cuban Missile Crisis, I thought it was all down to like Kennedy, JFK at the time. They said I thought he was almost acknowledged as the guy who saved the world.
Him and Khrushchev, who was the Russian president at the time, they both wanted the world to go on. And although they were posturing, I think Khrushchev made the right decision. And I mean, I suppose a lot of what's going on with Russia at the minute is that they're saying the same things. They're saying we don't want Ukraine, which is next door, to be like Cuba was for America. So there are different ways of looking at things that have gone on and things that are going on. It doesn't excuse what Russia are doing, but it's very similar situation to the Cuban Missile Crisis, so it links in quite well. On a lighter note, because we've been talking about very heavy things,
yes.
This podcast isn't going to be all about heavy things. The title of our podcast suggests some conflict between Rob and myself. I don't want to disappoint. I prepared a frighteningly difficult quiz. It's just five questions. When you get them wrong, Rob, I'm going to insult you. If you get any of them right, you can insult me. Is that a deal?
Well, I don't mind being insulted, but I don't know if I can insult you. What can I say about you? Because it's, I don't know. All right, well, I'll give it a go.
Who recorded the song first?
All right, go on. How many questions?
Five.
Five. All right, I better sit down then.
Tina Turner. She's the first. Her song, What's Love Got to Do With It? Who recorded that before her?
Who recorded it before her?
She made it her own, but who recorded it before her?
Oh, I don't know. Belinda Carlisle.
Bucks Fizz.
Bucks Fizz. Okay. Oh, man, we're going to get... All right, go on. Insult me.
Everyone who has ever loved you was wrong.
I quite agree with you on that one, I think. It's not an insult. It's just a... It's just confirming what I already know.
All right, number two. Cyndi Lauper, Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
I don't know. I would say that she did it originally. She didn't cover it.
No, it was done by an unknown person called Robert Hazard. I assume he's unknown. I don't know him. Which is a bit arrogant. Rob, you're not pretty enough to be this stupid.
I'm not pretty enough to what?
to be this stupid.
I have the face for radio, definitely.
Yeah. Right, number three. Manfred Mann's Blinded by the Light.
Flipping heck. I don't know. I don't know that one.
Have a guess.
I don't know. Boston.
Boston, no. It was Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, right. Okay.
Rob, I'm jealous of people who haven't met you.
It's a lot of people. A lot of people.
Right, number four. UB40's Red Red Wine.
Oh, I know this. Neil Diamond.
Right, come on. Right, come on. Hit me with it.
I'm not as stupid as you look.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. Yeah.
All right.
I do look stupid.
All right. No, yeah, that's what I mean. I'm not used to insulting people. I can't. I love insult. I'm not gonna. I can't think of stuff.
Go on. The last one. If you don't get this one, then you're the stupid one because it's your area of expertise.
All right.
The Beatles, Twist and Shout.
Oh, the Isley Brothers.
No. No, trick question. Someone else did it before.
Oh, bugger me. Let me just get my memory ranks thinking how it twists.
Are you checking Google?
No, my phone's in my pocket.
Mm.
Mm. I'm just trying to think who it was. No, I don't know. I thought it was the Isley Brothers.
No, it was a band called The Top Notes.
The Top Notes. Right, okay. Hit Rob, me.
It was called a jumpaline before your mother jumped on it.
Oh.
And on that note, I think we better leave it because, you know, you need to lick your wounds after the insult.
Yeah, you need to lick my arsehole, Tom.
Thank you for listening to Two Bald Men Fighting Over a Comb. We will be back.